the addiction of social media, they liken to the addiction of a chemical. So it's really great to have a chemical health specialist.
And really our strategic plan is really built around giving teachers and staff permission to take time to get to know kids, watching the subtleties when they come into school, if something's changing, that someone will reach out, know them well enough, say, what's happening?
It's not just about performing in school anymore. It's sports and arts and activities and jobs and volunteering and all the rest of that. Kids, it's a very different experience to be a kid now than it was 20 years ago. And then I think you throw social media on there, which is the highlight reel for everybody. That does add the pressure.
Social media is one of the most powerful new tools of our time. It gives us the power to stay in touch with family and friends or to meet new people without moving or even saying anything out loud. But what does that shift in perspective mean for our mental health? Over the next 4 episodes of Living Online, we'll be having conversations about social media and how it impacts mental health, especially for young adults and children who have never known a world without it. In this episode, we're talking about how schools and community organizations are partnering to support children and young adults. I'm joined today by South Washington County School Superintendent Keith Jacobus.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
South Washington County Schools Special Services District Social Worker, Jackie Schroeder.
Hi there. Thanks for the invite.
And Youth Service Bureau Youth and Family Education Coordinator, Mary Gugisberg.
Great to be with you all, and thanks for the partnership.
Thank you so much for being here today. So as we focus on the partnerships today between school and community organizations and the support that we have in place for students, let's maybe start the discussion off with what are some existing school resources that we have to help students?
I think that we have a lot of really exciting resources in our schools. In all of our schools, we have mental health staff that are available to support kids and families with things that come up for them. We have school counselors, we have school social workers, school psychologists, and our nurses. All of those people are working together and are available to work with kids and families to help reduce any barriers that there are to school, including mental health concerns.
And we are very fortunate in our community to have Mary and the Youth Services Bureau. They're always looking for ways that they can support our kids. The Rotary Club and other organizations in our community are always reaching out to us and say, how can we help? One of the things that we are working on is how do we create a framework in our school district that brings all of these resources together to make sure we are moving in the same direction or addressing issues that we're seeing as a district versus bits and pieces. Right now we have a lot of services, but they're not in every school, and they're not all talking together as we move forward. So that's our challenge. It's a wonderful challenge to have because we have such a supportive community.
And beyond our school staff, we're so fortunate to be able to partner with a variety of community partners. We have certainly Youth Service Bureau, as Dr. Jacobus just mentioned. Family Innovations also provides co-located services in a variety of our buildings, and we're happy to have Ellie Family Services on board this year, also providing co-located services in a number of buildings in the district. And we also got a grant this year through Park Nicollet called Growing Through Grief, and that provides mental health support specifically around grief and kids who are dealing with grief and loss.
Could you expand more on, just for some of our listeners out there, when you say co-located services, what that means or what that might entail?
Sure. Co-located services is basically a therapist in the school. So our school mental health staff, our psychologists and our counselors and our social workers aren't really doing therapy in school. They're there to help kids and to help navigate and to build skills. But that true mental health therapy and psychotherapy is different than what our school folks provide. So we do partner with these wonderful agencies to provide that service in school. So just like you would make an appointment and you would, parents would take their kids out of school and drive them to the clinic to have that appointment can happen right on school grounds, right then and there. There's still the partnership and the communication with families, but that therapy session can take place right at school.
And I can speak for being at one of the high schools here in the area. It has helped tremendously. The students just having that access during the school day that they have that service available, and parents are We have heard really positive things, you know, from parents and students where they don't have to deal with the scheduling aspect of it or the transportation. And so that's been a really positive, you know, resource that we have here in our schools.
Agreed.
Well, I would just like to add also, thanks to partnership with, for us, grant funding has put staff in multiple schools as well. So we have one of our therapists is at Lake each morning, one morning a week. Mike Huntley is in Cottage Grove Middle 2 days a week. I think that's a partnership with your school district, as well as thanks to Marathon Endeavor. What's the refinery? Sorry, forget the name. That is what helped do the Safe Schools grant money. So that has put two of our therapists that get to spend half days in schools.
And beyond mental health therapy, your service bureau is really able to support our students who are struggling with chemical health issues.
Yep. Very much. So that's a partnership with your school as well. So we have two full-time staff. One services the four high schools. So you'll see her between the four high schools 1 day a week. And then we have one person, 100% of her time is prevention, all the way from elementary through high school, wherever there's a presentation need. Does a lot in the health classes, a lot of presentations. And as we all know, vaping is a big concern. And that's, she gets a lot of requests for vaping presentations.
And I'd say many times too, you know, with the chemical health concerns, from my perspective, a lot of students, as you know, we focus here on this whole podcast about social media and mental health, they do go hand in hand with, you know, with the chemical concerns and social media and mental health. I mean, it all plays a part many times with a lot of these situations that, you know, the support staff in the school deal with, or, you know, our family innovations like mental health counselors deal with, and same with the chemical health specialists.
Yeah, may I build on that? When you get to see the Like movie, if you haven't yet, one of our chemical health specialists have seen it, the addiction of social media, they liken to the addiction of a chemical. So it's really great to have a chemical health specialist on the follow-up panels, because they can help really walk through that conversation and answer questions for parents. If I or my child is addicted to their device, what's the difference between addicted to a chemical? So it's really great to have that care that surrounds the families.
And I think sometimes we end up with students who have mental health concerns or are being impacted by things that are happening on social media, positive or negative, and their coping strategy becomes through that chemical use, and which is not helping their brain chemistry be healthy. And so to have that myriad of services and just that continuum, I think is so amazing that we can offer that to our students.
The other tie with the social media is that kids are seeing things on social media and starting to believe, either being pulled in through different types of advertising, but also feeling like this is something they should do. And then if they do take that step, then they're, on the other hand, they're caught in the middle when they're talking at school and they're talking about how bad this is. And basically, if they're asked directly, probably saying, "I'm not involved," then they are. It creates that really pull and push, and pushes them into that mental health imbalance, I think, and feeling guilty. And so I think there's a very strong tie to social media. And as we said in our last show, the social media isn't good or bad. It's just the elements that can impact us in different ways. And mental health, as we've seen the increase in kids struggling, even over the short period of the last 5 years, but certainly over 10 or 15 years, I think we can trace it back to a number of pressures that kids have, and social media is one of them.
And I think really all of these people who are available to our students, really, we know that the most protective things for our kids is relationships. And so, yes, certainly our teachers are amazing at developing trusting relationships with our students and our mental health staff. That's what they're trained to do, and to have partnerships with the community who can work and have relationships with our kids in a different way. It's just such a wonderful tight net that our kids have around them. So if they fall, if they stumble, we're going to catch them.
And really, our strategic plan is really built around giving teachers and staff permission to take time to get to know kids. The one goal in personalization is about getting to know them, watching the subtleties when they come into school, if something's changing, that someone will reach out, know them well enough, say, what's happening? And then the culture and climate element of building a positive culture and climate so kids feel safe reporting and safe growing up with us, versus just coming to school and listening and going home.
And if kids aren't feeling safe, we have opportunities for them to report things. And if they're seeing things on social media, or if they heard something, or if they're just worried about it, they can report anonymously through our Tip Text program that's in the majority of our middle schools and high schools. And they don't have to worry about repercussions coming back on them, but it does give them that avenue to be able to report that.
One of the benefits of having a panel that follows the documentaries that we've been honored to bring to the community is just the other night, a doctor said how great it is that our kids are caring for their peers and they're coming forward and reporting, hey, something I saw on social media is concerning me. And I just love that we're growing a generation of caring for each other.
And we as a district are able to provide for our students an opportunity and a way to report those concerns to district staff so we can intervene with kids.
The other element that we're working through is our social and emotional learning mm-hmm. curriculum. If you followed all of the research on when our brains actually develop, it gets later and later. I think now we're into our early 30s that frontal lobe really matures. And so it is a learning experience long after they leave high school on still developing your thinking skills to offset your emotional system. And so as we move into the social and emotional curriculum, that also gives kids the support and helps them understand their emotions, but then gives them that maturity and outlet to talk to a teacher, to use the ways they could report and really take care of each other. And instead of looking at it as telling on someone, it's really on saving someone.
Mm-hmm. Can you go into a little bit of details as far as that's being implemented at the elementary schools right now? And then is it moving forward to some of the other levels or a little bit how?
Well, we have a number of different, approaches in different schools and different levels and a lot of the work that we already are doing would be tied to social emotional learning. It may not be called that. Our responsive classroom and our classroom morning meetings at the elementary level, our advisories at the middle school and at the high school on different ways that we provide kids opportunities to talk with teachers without a curriculum in the middle of that. But what we hope to do is move social and emotional curricular areas and content throughout the pre-K through 12 system. And it may come in embedded in classroom discussions. It may come into health discussions at secondary level. It may be infused in just general conversations. So we don't want to look at this as an add-on program because it's really a foundation of helping kids grow up as we help them learn. But we've been looking at a number of different elements, and we're examining that through our teaching and learning department this year and what would be the best approach. But I would say if you speak with teachers at every one of our schools, they could identify elements that are all about social and emotional learning.
I think that's really exciting, just the initiatives moving forward and how we as a district have also morphed and changed to meet those changing needs of students, you know, throughout the years. And as we continue to move forward with this initiative and incorporate those social and emotional learning skills, because we really are providing those students for skills to be successful, you know, and not just academic skills, you know, those life skills that are very important.
One of the other things that we're doing district-wide, we've been fortunate to get a grant from the state to implement a mental health screening tool throughout the district. And we have pockets of that happening now, but there's nothing very consistent across the district. But it'll really give us a good picture of who we need to be paying extra attention to, who needs extra support in a really systematic, thoughtful way.
And I think we have a continued responsibility to look at our curriculum and the amount of material and things we expect to complete in 1 year. Over my career, it has increased, and it's just impossible to get through that type of curriculum. And so if we're not careful, we can increase the anxiety and the mental health issues without meaning to. We're all trying to make our kids the very best. I taught biology, and my goal was to make them biologists by the end of the year. But that is unrealistic when you think about all of the different content areas that kids need to have an understanding about. And truly, when you talk about this, sometimes folks, it sounds like you're bringing the rigor down, but we need to slow down, reduce the amount that we teach so we can delve deeper into the curriculum. We will do better for our kids as far as our overall mastery and understanding and meaning of learning, and will also help the mental health piece. So I think our curriculum review has been looking at that, and I think we've been moving in a direction for all the right reasons, but without seeing until recently the unintended consequences.
I want to add on that the importance of the parent side. The parents are hungry for that education also, because they all want their child to be as successful as possible. So when we get to collaborate and do parent education, how exciting, everyone wins, right? Because I hear from kids, my parents are the reason that I'm being pushed, or my parents are the reason I have to get into the right college, or the parents. So isn't it great to think we can step back and support our parents as well as our kids?
And I think when we look at the pressures that are on kids these days with, you know, not only, it's not just about performing in school anymore, it's sports and arts and activities and jobs and volunteering and all the rest of that. Kids, it's a very different experience to be a kid now than it was 20 years ago. And then I think you throw social media on there, which is the highlight reel for everybody, right? We all can acknowledge that that's not necessarily real life, but that does add the pressure. And I think to your point, Mary, that there's pressure on parents too, that we're, it's not so different as the pressure for kids. And so parents are in turn putting that pressure on kids, maybe unknowingly. And so how do we help parents acknowledge that, and what do they do about it?
And I've heard from parents too about how do we slow down. I have a parent advisory group, and our new homework policy that the board approved last summer that came into being for our district this school year came from parents. They talked to me about just the nature of what it looks like after school for the amount of time that kids spend and the little time they spend as a family, and then what time they go to bed. So we started a conversation, a year-long conversation about homework. They developed some drafts that went to the student advisory, and we received student feedback. Then we had a committee of teachers take a look at it. But they are looking, our parents are looking for help and answers, because they can start to put pressure on their students without realizing, because they think this is the right thing to do.
Right. Because parents just want what's best for their kids. And I think that goes back to our mental health staff in the buildings who can help parents guide, you know, walk through that piece. And certainly, like, our more intensive work that we can do with our partnerships in the buildings can help parents walk through that piece too.
I think the mental health staff is huge, because school counselors, you know, school social workers, our psychologists, even our cultural liaisons that are in the building, you know, our nurses, all those support staff that's in the school, they are really like the front line for a lot of our students. And, you know, by students, you know, talking with them, you know, that's when we can refer them on to, you know, additional support, or get them connected with community resources or the different, you know, community partnerships that we have. And I'm curious, Mary, you talked about parents, and what resources do you have for parents, or, you know, as far as social media and mental health goes, for families and students? What can you speak more to the Youth Service Bureau, and how have they helped, I should say?
Yeah, well, one is first and foremost the Like movie, mm-hmm. and the partnership that we get to share this film with. All of your middles and a handful of high schools have said yes so far, so that's super exciting. But we also have a ton of parent education classes. We have a speakers bureau, and we get to go into the community. Everything that we offer on our website is complimentary to attend someone else, because we're a nonprofit. We have to keep the lights on also. Someone else is paying to bring our services in to provide education classes. We have a great behind the screen class that focuses exactly on this and helps build that resiliency as well as regulation.
Awesome. And if parents are, maybe they can't attend a class, are they always free to contact Youth Service Bureau as well for questions about, you know, social media and mental health?
Most definitely. And there's a ton of resources on our website. And we have an e-news that we send once a month as well. So thank you.
And they can sign up for the e-news?
Yeah, completely free.
Okay.
Yep, thanks.
Okay, wonderful. And so as far as supporting children and young adults, maybe outside the school too, I mean, you partner with the, you know, with our school district to do the documentary. Is there any other, you know, classes or resources that you have for students?
Yeah, so that's a great question as well. Through our diversion program, we have a responsible social media use class that a parent and a child attend together. Typically, because it's diversion, it is referral, because a child has inappropriately used something, whether it's your school SROs, local law enforcement, a parent can refer. I mean, anyone can refer and walk through that class with our diversion specialist. And then counseling. I mean, our therapists see, the top thing our therapists see kids for is anxiety. And we already have covered that's coupled with their social media use. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for asking.
Mm-hmm. No problem. As we look at the school side of things, we talked a little bit about, you know, what's being done in the school. Is there anything, you know, that we'd like to highlight or point out that you'd like to share about what's being done at each level within District 833?
One, I would say at the elementary level, we've created a number of our schools have rooms where kids, if they're struggling in the classroom, it may be behavior, it may be anxiety, they may not just be making it for that time in the classroom, they can go to that room, and it's a calming room. And when you go into these rooms, there's soft lighting, there's different types of seating, there's things that kids can just manipulatives to give them a chance to just think of through in a little bit. It's a bit like a timeout room that's positive and self-imposed. It's not about punishment. It's about just regulating. They cannot stay in that room for all day, or it's not a way to get out of class. It's a short-term, get yourself back together. So in the classroom, the teachers have talked to kids about how do you, when you're having a tough day or you're anxious or you're mad, how do you get back on track, deal with those emotions positively and come back. So we have at the elementary those types of areas in most of our schools. We also have individual calming spaces in the elementary classrooms. It might be in a corner where there's a place where they can go. There'll be different things they might read, they might look at, they might be able to just to get some energy, like I said, with manipulatives or some different, I don't want to say toys, they're not really toys, but artifacts.
Fidgets.
Yeah, fidgets, yep, yep. And one school that is really embraced as far as all throughout the school in the classrooms is Red Rock Elementary. I know our other elementaries have that too, but I just happened to be at Red Rock yesterday, and we were going through and looking at and listening to how the kids have really used that wisely, and they get used to that. And it's a great skill for them to have as they go to the middle school and high school. There they will, the schools have different things such as calming areas, but because of maturity, it's a little different than the elementary. It's more on being able to talk through and when a student knows they're having a tough day, to be able to talk about that, take that break and come back. And if you think about us as adults in the workplace, we all have that ability. We do it without saying we're going to a calming space. But I say that because sometimes folks feel that kid should be a little bit more resilient or tough. Why do we have to coddle them to say you have to calm down? Well, we do that in our own, but we've learned that in different ways. We're just trying to accelerate that in this era of social media and stress that kids have that I didn't have as a young person, and it's a new frontier. So so I would think that we'll continue those areas, but the partnership piece is at the secondary level, one of the most important areas, and then to help those experts guide us.
And the middle school and the high schools, there's a smattering of those rooms. Mm-hmm. And those rooms are really, you know, based on brain research and what helps the brain regulate itself and get back to a place where it can learn and it's ready to learn. So it is very, very purposeful what those rooms are filled with. There's a lot of yoga going on in elementaries, and that has worked its way into middle school and high school as well. And it's not rooms full of kids standing up on mats. What can you do at your desk right now to calm down? And kids figure sneaky ways to incorporate those breathing or those pressure points in their classroom so they can remain in class and be regulated and access the academic piece. And certainly our counseling centers in our middle schools and high schools are bustling. I think that's a fair word. There's always a kid that is needing something. They're a busy, busy place.
The other importance of the students having a place to go is you don't want to have them be embarrassed.
No.
By having something happen where classmates at the high school, middle school, or elementary will see. So we want some privacy if a yes. student is having some problems too. Okay. And that's why that type of environment is really important, or what they could do in the classroom that themselves before it would escalate.
And I think helping kids maintain their dignity through their mental health issues is really important, because they have to reintegrate back into, and we want them to reintegrate back into their classrooms and their school communities with that dignity and be able to be happy, healthy members of our schools.
Yep. We have to give kids a chance to reinvent themselves. That's the size of a school sometimes is very positive when it's big enough where if a student makes a mistake, that they have that chance to reinvent. They're not labeled for the rest of their career in that level, that all the kids remember that. And so it's I mean, we don't have schools sized because of that. But I love small learning communities and that, but the size of a school, sometimes if there's a student or students that have struggled, they get a chance to reinvent themselves. And each year is a new year.
Mm-hmm. So. I think speaking on the counseling center at the secondary schools as well, it's, you know, that's a beautiful spot, I think, to go because, you know, school counselors, we not only deal with mental health, but we also do academics. We also do college and career. So for students to just come down there, nobody knows really what's it for because we work in so many different areas that students feel really open coming down there because they don't feel judged by it because students are, oh, they must have a question on college or they must have a question on their, you know, academics. And so it's really, I think that's a really beautiful thing for a lot of the secondary schools that have those counseling centers. And that's where you can find the school counselors and, you know, school social workers and school psychologists. And it is really confidential and students feel, you know, comfortable coming down there. And we always stress that, of course, at the beginning of the year to all the students, you know, this is a safe spot. You can always come down here. So.
But I think also to have those disciplines working together, mm-hmm. and we come from different angles professionally, but there's so much overlap between what we do and our end goal is the same. And so I think for the partnership within that mental health team within the building is just what's best for kids. And then to be able to pull in our community partners when we need to, mm-hmm. and to have them available to us. You know, if we ourselves as professionals need consultation, and then to be able to refer them on if that's what they need.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So as we talked about a lot of different resources that we have in the school and the community. So as we really move forward and close this whole, you know, huge discussion on social media and mental health, that will be a never ending discussion, right? We know this, you know, social media is not going away anytime soon. So it's a continuous discussion. But really, like, how can we really help students, you know, manage their feelings in a healthy way and cope with life's up and down with all these pressures of social media and their mental health?
One of the things that is based on brain research as well, just our flexible learning spaces, where kids can fidget around, they can move, they can sit at higher levels, they can stand in the classroom. If the community hasn't been in one of our schools, I'd invite them to come in and see our classrooms. They look completely different, and it gives the students a chance to get off of a plastic hard chair that they're sitting on and do a number of things. And there's no argument in the research, the connection between the mind and the body. And so helping that is one avenue that I think we've embraced as a school district. And then as, you know, I'd let stop and talk about more of the partnerships, because when we get to a point, our expertise is exhausted and we need the experts to come in. Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing that we can really do and that the research would back up is have those strong relationships with students. Every kid needs a cheerleader. And I think to have those relationships with students, to be able to help them talk through their feelings. So many kids, they have happy or mad, and those are the only two feelings that they know about. And to be able to help kids have emotional literacy and have language around their feelings, and then help them be able to manage it, and to have that adult in relationship be able to say, but look at what a great job you did and you handled that, and to be able to build on those little victories and let them snowball into really big things. And so I think that one of the best things that we can do for kids is have those relationships with them.
I always talk in my parent education classes the importance of 5 caring adults. And then I challenge the parents, can you name those 5 caring adults in your child's life? And if they can't, I'm like, that's your homework. You get to go home tonight. And literally, and it's never too late. My daughter's in college and I still know she is in touch with multiple of the 5 caring adults that my husband and I put in place for her. But I encourage, and teachers frequently, when parents are like raising their hands and telling me who is in their village, in essence, right? Teachers are one of the first coaches, teachers. They may say a counselor from school. They may say their therapist from our organization or another organization. But how great to have 5 caring adults that are active in your child's life.
I think the other thing to remember is that, especially when we start talking about our middle school and our high school students, some of these kids have the ability to reason or speak as if they are adults. And mm-hmm. I think for us as adults and for parents to remember that they're still kids, their brain is not done growing. Dr. Jacobus, you mentioned that we know that brain is not done growing for some folks until they're, you know, in their 30s, which is a very long ways away. And so remember that they need help, that sometimes those 15-year-olds are a lot more like 5-year-olds, take 10 years off of it, in what they need. They still need a person to talk to regulate with them as they're moving through something that's really, really hard. And they still need parents to be there to set those limits and those boundaries, and they need teachers to set limits and boundaries for them too. They may be big in size, but their brains are still children's.
And I'd say having those conversations regarding the social media, you know, and going back to that is really important as far as, you know, having teachers feel comfortable, like, let's openly talk about this, you know, about the social media. And Erin Walsh, in some of our past episodes, she always said, you know, she encourages parents to have those conversations early and have them often with students. So kind of reverting back to that statement is, you know, really encouraging parents, really encouraging that partnership to, you know, with the school and community and parents, have all of us work together. And then really the teachers too, you know, and the educators. And, you know, we're doing a lot in our district right now to have those conversations around social media and bring that in about social media and mental health, but continuing with those partnerships.
I was just going to echo exactly what you said, the importance of those 5 caring adults, because our kids may not want us in their social Instagram or whatever platform they're on. But if you can say, sure, we're going to have one of those 5 caring adults is also going to follow you. And then they're your cheerleader to say yay, or they're going to say, hey, mom, I think you need to have a conversation with, because. So they're in there, but it's also being cared for without creeping on their privacy. What other way to say it? So.
And I think to the resources that's available, you know, we have a lot of school resources, it sounds like, you know, what we talked about today, we have a lot of community resources. So, you know, for all the parents and families listening out there to really take advantage of those resources, and both in the school and out of the school, and, you know, really focusing on those partnerships, feel free to reach out to, you know, Youth Service Bureau, feel free to reach out to your students, you know, school, with any concern or question. You know, we're here to help, and we want to partner as much as we can.
I would say to parents too that listen, follow your gut, and I know that sounds kind of a tough word to say, but there is a lot of research that when you have that feeling that something's not right, it's tingling your brain, and that is a feeling you should follow. So if something doesn't feel right with your child at home, call the school and ask the question. And find out, is that normal? Is that something I should be worried about? Because we need that help as adults too. We don't know everything about how to navigate the social media. It changes so quickly. We need partners and caring adults that help adults as well. So we're in this together. But I think sometimes we discount thinking, it's not a big deal, or someone's going to say, don't worry about that. And I think asking the question is much better than just assuming it's normal.
Yeah, absolutely. If you are worried, if you have concerns, you know, our mental health staff in the buildings have ways of being kind of covert and, you know, low key, and being able to manage your confidentiality and your privacy as somebody who's sharing information with us. And we don't want people to get in trouble, but we want everybody to be safe.
Could you tell us a little bit more about this Like documentary that's getting shown at many of our secondary schools in the district?
Yeah, thank you for asking. You know, what's exciting is it is that partnership and the fact that your district has received a grant. And when Jody Witt was writing the grant, she and I were in collaboration a lot to see, is this the right fit for caring for our families? And I'll just read to you the description of the film. And it is from IndieFlix, the parent company. Like is a documentary that explores the impact of social media on our lives. Technology is a tool. It's here to stay, and social platforms are places to connect, share, and care. What really is happening? Are we addicted? How do we stop? What do we need to know? By understanding the effects of technology and social media on the brain, our lives, and our civilization, we can learn to navigate it more safely together. We cover all of that. And then with the panel, making it personal after watching the film, having those panel of experts, I think, brings it home.
And we also know that, you know, physical education and physical exercise, that piece is really important as well when dealing with, you know, mental health with our students. So, Keith, did you want to expand a little bit more on that?
Sure. There's really a myriad of benefits from exercising, and there isn't an argument in the scientific world. And one of the proponents of this is a professor at Harvard, John Rady. But when you exercise, even brisk walking, just elevating your heart rate for 20 minutes at a time, or even 10 minutes, you have a cascade of things that happen in your brain because of the proteins that are released in your muscles. And you have the neurotransmitters that are released that make you feel better, serotonin and dopamine, which also dopamine helps you focus. But it also is one of your risk and reward neurotransmitters. And serotonin is that feel-good transmitter. And that along with, there's another factor, it's a long word, which I like to say it, and then people give me a hard time that I know it. But it has to be released when neurons connect to each other. But psychologists are building an exercise into every therapy program and trying to wean people off medication, if possible. There's nothing wrong with the medication, but we know that the exercise could replace. And if there is a student that may not be at the level for that, getting them out and moving. So what we're trying to do is have kids get up throughout the day, get back to the recess, have PE every day in high school. But at night, as parents, if your kids are struggling, the best thing you could do is take a walk with them. You get to talk with them and connect with them, but you're also getting that benefit of the exercise. And stay off the phone and the social media. Gives their brain a chance to relax a little bit from all of the pressures of thinking, I should be doing this.
Yeah, I think that's super important too, and a great tip as we move forward to really kind of unplug from that social media and do some exercise or just get out there, even just get out for a walk, can really help that brain, unplug and release all those dopamine and good chemicals. So thank you. Is there any other closing remarks or, comments or just knowledge or, from your areas of expertise that you want to share today, just in regards to, really those partnerships and kind of how we move forward together with social media and mental health?
I'd just like to thank Mary and the Youth Service Bureau and all of our partners. It is really impressive how much support we have if we can channel their energies and their expertise. But Youth Service Bureau is involved in all sorts of things. And every time our staff calls, you answer the call, and thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. It's great to partner. Very important to partner together. Mm-hmm. And it takes all of us. All of our agencies are needed, very much so.
There's no shortage of work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, wonderful. So, as you can see by, or hear, I should say, by listening today, as our world really changes, you can see how our schools and communities, really are responding to those changing dynamics. And we are constantly, looking and wanting to be on the edge of those changing dynamics to better support our students. And so it's really wonderful to hear, the supports that we have in school and out of school and how we're partnering together and continue to partner together just to support our students and really, help them, be successful in all areas of their life. So just want to thank you again to Keith, Jackie, and Mary for taking the time to be here today and share all of your knowledge and thoughts and experiences, and that it was really informative and super helpful for our families and our listeners today. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to our conversation today. You can learn more about our guests and find tips and resources about managing social media and mental health online at www.sowashco, spelled SOWASHCO. .org/livingonline. This podcast was produced by South Washington County Schools thanks to funding from a grant provided by Prairie Care.